Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I
walk. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of filmstage.com. This is our first new episode in this new year, the year of our Lord, 2017. And we are here today to talk to you about Martin Scorsese's religiously focused epic, Silence. Guys, new year, new us. With us today, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
Hello. What is your resolution for the new year?
My resolution is to read more and be more involved in the world, as much as it seems really painful to do that at times.
All right. We also have Bill Graham. Bill's resolution for the new year is to be more pumped. Bill, you are probably in the best, like, physical condition of all of us, so I don't presume that you're going to have a New Year's resolution that's like, I want to lose 5 pounds. So what is your actual resolution?
I got a couple. I like the idea of reading more. I've grabbed some... can we fade out the music real quick? Because that's...
All right. We're going to fade it out. Fade it out to silence.
So, nice. Good segue. Too bad it's wasted. I definitely want to read more. I've got some kind of inspirational books that I'm going to be reading and getting myself through. One of them that I'm in the middle of right now is Start With Why. And it's pretty good so far. But and then also, actually it's fitness related, stretching more. So, yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay. Get a little more.
Wait, do you mean legitimate, like, self-help books, Bill?
I'm not sure how to categorize it, but of course I also picked up The Princess Diarist by
Carrie Fisher.
Dearly departed Carrie Fisher.
That's so. Right. This is our first episode since Carrie Fisher and her mother Debbie Reynolds passed away.
Jesus.
Also George Michael.
He's not a movie star. But yes, George Michael passed as well.
He's a star in my heart.
he actually was one of the best parts of the movie Keanu.
Completely agree there.
My resolution, actually, I made a resolution. I'm going to finish my third novel this year. My wife then glared at me and said, maybe you should make a resolution to give one of your first two to a publisher. So I guess
Patterson, what?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I know. So my resolution is to actually try to get something published rather than just kind of sit on my laurels on the fact that I've finished something, which is going to be difficult for me. I think that's pretty much it. That's the only one that really matters. I don't want to end the year with the same job I'm in now. So there's that.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's it. The new year, the new us, back and better than ever. For anyone, I know people have asked on Twitter, we will be doing a top 10. We're actually going to record that tomorrow morning, but today we are here to talk about Silence. Before we do that, I just want to say you can follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show, follow us on Facebook, The Film Stage Show, and of course you can email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. And as always, we are brought to you by Mubi. It's post-Christmas, but it's still a perfect time to get yourself a gift that makes up for all the gifts that you didn't get if you were like me and somehow just got a pair of jeans and a sweater from your family, and you were honestly expecting some movie love in your life, what better gift to give to yourself to make up for the disappointment than getting yourself Mubi? Mubi is a
hell, guaranteed to be better than socks, is what you're saying.
Pretty. I don't know, it depends on the socks. Honestly, I would have preferred socks over another sweater.
Okay. What about a bunny onesie?
My wife would have flipped out if someone had gotten her a bunny onesie. But I don't want to speak for our audience, but I do know that our audience loves movies, because otherwise I don't even know what you'd come here for. So go to Mubi, MUBI.com.
Certainly not us.
God, no. Ugh. Jesus. I would just love to meet the person who's like, I'm not a fan of movies, but these three guys, I just like hanging out with them. So Mubi curates a selection of movies for you to watch, and you have 30 days to watch each film before it disappears. But every day, they give a new movie to you. So it's like a new gift every day. You can now watch Mubi on Roku, which for me has been a boon like no other. And you can, of course, get a free 30-day trial to see what Mubi is all about by going to mubi.com/filmstage, and we will give you 30 days. And that is our gift to you. So Mubi, new year, no tagline. That is it. As far
that was catchy.
As
I like that.
New year, no tagline. That's a good tagline for not having a tagline. Anyway, that's it. Let us now talk about Silence. As I said, the newest film from director Martin Scorsese. This movie stars Andrew Garfield and also features Adam Driver and Ciarán Hinds, and that's honestly as many people as I'm going to be able to say their names without having to apologize. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
What about now. Liam Neeson?
Oh, that's true. Liam Neeson. Let's listen to the trailer.
Our Lord said to them, "Go ye into the whole world and preach the gospel to every living creature."
Ferreira is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferreira.
This is in your hearts, then, both of you?
Yes.
Then I must trust God has put it down. The moment you set foot in that country, you step.
So that is the trailer for Silence. This movie focuses on two Jesuit priests who go to Japan in the 1600s, a time of great peril for Christians in Japan, a failed rebellion by the peasant class with the help of the Japanese Catholics has led to an inquisition against Christianity in Japan, and their mentor was a supposed victim of that inquisition. Not quite ready to believe that he is apostatized and given up the faith, and eager for news about how he is, these two travel to Japan to try to find out what happened to their mentor. What follows is a 2-hour and 40-minute epic that investigates faith from every possible angle. Let us see what we thought about it. Let's start with the person who saw this movie most recently, Bill Graham.
Oh, no. All right. Okay. I'm ready for this.
Let's get it out of the way. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yes.
Guys, this can't quite possibly be controversial as the La La Land episode. So we're off to a good start.
Yeah, because this is not nearly as like universally beloved as La La Land.
Sure.
No, this film has already had a lot of very divisive reviews and things like that.
Sure.
And to be honest with you, one of the main things that I've kept seeing pop up and this will be the only time I really refer to any other outside reviews and things like that, but the main thing that I've seen pop up again and again is that this film is beautiful, it is gorgeous, it is incredibly well acted, excluding Liam Neeson's lack of a accent at all. And it is bewildering to watch. It is not something that I would recommend to very many people. This is, for all intents and purposes, a extremely well-made movie and everything like that. Scorsese's behind it, and he is a living legend. But that does not mean that every film that he makes is entirely watchable for a mass audience or, you know, anybody outside of a very niche audience. And that's kind of how I fell on this film. It is an extremely tough watch. I think, having my own background and kind of religion, being brought up as a Baptist, and kind of not really leaving the faith, but just kind of dwindling away from it, dwelling away from I'm not drifting. Even sure how to
drifting. Lapsed.
Yeah. Lapsed. Yeah. I haven't been to a church in, man, outside of a funeral or a wedding, I haven't been to a church in a very long time. It's not necessarily because I've lost my faith. It's just because I've become very, I've become very angry at organized religion as a whole. I think they do more bad than good in a lot of times and a lot of places, and so that's just kind of my own bag and my own kind of situation. And I think this film, what it's trying to kind of pull at is it's trying to pull at kind of that religious religious kind of narrow edge where you're on one side or the other and you're kind of on the fence. But it's funny because yet this film deals with denouncing faith and religion over and over and over, and yet it's never done in any way that actually makes that we as an audience actually believe in, right? I'm going to kind of tiptoe around some spoilers and things like that, but the entire film basically takes place around Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver trying to figure out what has happened to Liam Neeson in Japan. They've got this vague letter from him that took years to get to them, and they're not quite sure what's happening with him. They've been told that he basically denounced his own religion and is now living there, I guess as a Japanese, you know, convert in a way. And so they're like, well, this doesn't make any sense. He's the one that was leading the expedition over there. We need to go find out. And so that's kind of the entire journey, is to try and track down and figure out what's happened to Liam Neeson. And the entire time, it becomes very, very obvious that the Japanese people, the majority of the Japanese people, either A, don't care, or B, really, really do not like the fact that Christianity is being spread. I think that's kind of the majority opinion, is either I don't care, just don't bother me, or I really, really hate you, please go away. And, you know, there are some tufts of religious Christian Japanese there that they kind of are welcomed by. But for the most part, this film is incredibly oppressive in its mood, in its tone, in the way it's shot. It makes no bones about torture and things like that. It is a really, really tough watch. if this just does not connect with you in the way that Scorsese is probably intending it to do. Again, I think this film has a niche audience, and for those people, I think it will be interesting. I'm curious how the book actually plays out, because I think this would be a phenomenal read as kind of a documentary text of what was going on there. I'm not sure it makes a very great movie in the way that it's kind of filmed and plays out. So that's my kind of feeling on it.
All right. Michael Snydell, what did you think of Silence?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with Bill to a certain extent that, you know, this, more than almost any other movie I can think of this year, is something where your previous experience with faith is going to influence how you interpret this movie as a whole. And, you know, even knowing, you know, Scorsese is someone, you know, even when he's done directly, religious films, you know, like Last Temptation of Christ and things like that. But, you know, even nearly every one of his films has this, it's a simplification, but a savior complex and these deeply Catholic themes. And it is a very interesting tension between how Scorsese intends the movie to be interpreted or read, and how the person going in is viewing the film. So it is very interesting in the sense of, as Bill was saying, this is again a very oppressive watch in the sense of it's especially for the first, I would say first act, it is an incredibly compact and intentionally claustrophobic film. And then it opens up, but doesn't necessarily open up in terms of geography. Like, it's intentionally very confusing in the sense of, you know, sometimes they're sailing across a brief expanse of the sea or something to another village and things like that. And so you have a sense that there are these villages that, you know, have had some deep experience with religion, but so much of the film is about creating this space for larger dialogues about truth. And that's what I personally find very interesting about this. Coming at this again as someone who struggled a lot with organized religion and the context in which religion becomes a tool, and when it becomes something, when it becomes a tool and when it becomes something helpful, like I find the way that this film meditates on that through various different contexts very, very, very interesting. But also it's an experience that it doesn't let you in very easily. And even though it does have, you know, these prestige trappings in the sense of, you know, you have Rodrigo Prieto, the cinematographer, he has crafted among the most gorgeous images of the year, just in the way that fog and all these environmental aspects of Japan, like, just are so they're so thick, honestly. Like, there's just sense, just a sense of density to this film, even as it's so small for such a long period. And so, you know, that those contradictions make it a very interesting film. But I like this film a lot. I actually put it in my top 15. But it is a film that ultimately I do have a sense where I'm not sure where exactly I should view Scorsese's final ideas on this. And obviously we'll get into that in spoilers, but again, like, this is something that is so indebted to how someone experiences their own faith. And I say that as someone, you know, who's an atheist, that I'm wondering if people who, you know, speaking of a niche audience, I'm wondering if people who don't want to explore spirituality or faith at all, I'm wondering if this is just going to go so over their head just because it's such an intricate exploration of the specific question of why people believe.
Okay, so I guess it's my turn. I guess everyone probably expects me to talk about aesthetics first, because that's kind of what I usually lean on. This movie is gorgeous. I don't know, it's kind of to its credit that no one's really talked about it aesthetically yet. The movie...
I thought I talked about it a lot.
Little bit.
I mean, I called it dense.
I can't. Yes. I'm just gonna say the cinematography here is bold and lovely. I mean, they give you these sweeping vistas and these intimate close-ups, and they never lose sight of like this raw beauty of the nature of the of Japan, and the sweep of the ocean. And every time that there's a mist over something, it's just a gorgeous movie to look at. And as with most Scorsese movies, you know, he loves to create icons that he returns to over and over again in a film. And his compositions in this are just like second to none. Even if it's just placing a plaque on the ground, it's a gorgeous shot. So there's nothing here aesthetically to really be upset about. I think that even if this movie isn't your cup of tea theologically or narratively, I mean, you can't deny the power of the images. The music, when it comes, is also very striking. And the performances are, I would say, roundly excellent. I know people who have complained about accents. I honestly didn't notice if Garfield was doing anything that was too...
It was Driver for me.
Yeah, Driver was in and out, but Garfield at least committed to an accent throughout, yeah. and kept it.
I don't know if it's Portuguese. I honestly couldn't tell you what a Portuguese accent is, but Garfield was very, like you said, consistent. Sure. And Driver, you could hear it in the trailer, when he's just like, that's not possible. It's like, okay, again, maybe that's Portuguese, but he definitely leaves that at some point. But the movie leaves him, too, so I guess it doesn't really matter. I will say that the Japanese actors in this are fantastic, and the more time that we got with them, the more I was really happy that we were spending that time with them and allowing them to really like inhabit their characters. As a Catholic,
can I mention one thing real quick? Kim Watanabe was actually going to be in this film, but was replaced. He was going to be the interpreter. And so he got replaced, but man, to be honest, and I'll let you get back to your review. Sorry, Brian. But right. Man, I am so happy. I didn't recognize anybody in this film as far as the Japanese cast. I love that. I really do.
Yeah, because it would have been, you know, it's the type of thing where Hollywood loves to do that thing where it's like, all right, we're in another country. Who's the one actor that Americans know?
Usually him.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So it would be like Ken Watanabe, and they'd be like, can John Chu like pass as a Japanese guy? Could we get him in there? Yeah, it's like, what was it? The Memoirs of a Geisha, where they just 100% had a Chinese actress as the main girl. I think it was Zhang Ziyi, who's a fantastic actress, but is Chinese, and people were not happy with that. So, yeah.
I mean, the people, I do have to say, the people we picked do have, like, a lot of nerd cred. Like, one of the people, for instance, is in Tetsuo the Iron Man, which was a major influence for Akira. I'm just saying, like, he definitely handpicked some people who had some cred in Japanese cinema. Like, they're not nobodies. That's all I'm trying to say.
I'm saying that they're not like a safety choice so that American audiences won't balk at the idea of watching a foreign film. Yes.
So, I just want to mention that. Sorry.
I appreciate that. As one of like the 17 people who have seen Tetsuo the Iron Man, that was pretty great for me. Actually, I would wager that most of our audience has probably seen Tetsuo the Iron Man, right? We got a weird audience.
Oh, I don't know.
Tweet at us. Give us a hashtag. Hashtag I've seen Tetsuo. I will not be checking that hashtag. Now, where this movie could go off the rails for some people is that the previews really do make it seem like it's going to be a character-based emotional journey. A friend of mine said, it looks like a Catholic Apocalypse Now. And while that is true, it is true in that it's a Catholic Apocalypse Now. It's not an Apocalypse Now that happens to have Catholic people in it.
Yeah.
Catholicism is a big part of it. So along with what Bill said, and what you also echoed, Mike, how you view religion, and even if you're not religious, just what your religious curiosity is going to dictate a lot of what you feel about this movie. Hmm. I am a practicing Catholic. What day is it? A week and a half ago, I had my infant daughter baptized into the Catholic faith. So I'm in it. I'm right there.
You're stuck.
I mean, I'm a confirmed Catholic. I did baptism, first communion, confirmation, do reconciliation.
Same.
Like, you know, I go to all the things. I try to go to church every week. It's been harder since I've had a daughter, weirdly enough. But yeah, I mean, I am a religious person. That's just who I am. And so it always strikes me as weird when a movie will have a religious person, but have religion be like a very singular part of their life that doesn't seem to affect everything else. It's interesting to see a movie like this where the Japanese peasantry, it really does kind of twine itself into their sense of being and where they are. So that was interesting for me, because back in the day, one of the strongest recommenders of Catholic religion to certain people who were being targeted by missionaries was that their lives sucked. And you could basically say to them, you're suffering now, but guess what? If you pledge to our faith, when you die, you'll be in paradise. And it was interesting to see that, because you can't really do that too much anymore. Like, in a modern society, you can't really go up to someone and say, I know that you're living a subsistence existence and breaking your back in the fields every day. Maybe you should join our religion and you can have some peace when you finally die. Because modernity has made that not really a thing people have to deal with in general, obviously. So that was interesting.
Or at least the people that are going to be listening to this podcast.
If you're listening to this podcast, I presume that you are not living a subsistence life in a shack and being taxed by your feudal lords. I mean, and that's where...
Shout out to Justin Vernon, who's maybe our father, our listener.
So... It's interesting to me to see a time when religion really could threaten a regime like that. I mean, the shogunate, it needs to have power. And we've talked before, ironically, in another Andrew Garfield movie, about how the Emperor of Japan was, during certain times, seen as a kind of godlike figure. And so if you're not praising him, if you've been given this Western religion, then they've lost one of their means of control. The movie doesn't go into that as much as I would have liked, but what the movie does do is really
But it doesn't deify the Emperor. We should clarify that.
Yes.
Silence does not deify the Emperor in the same way as Hacksaw Ridge, for
no,
instance.
No, no, no. I mean, they don't even really talk about the Emperor at all in this movie. It's really the
yeah, not really.
The regional like shogunate that they kind of go for. And yeah, the Japanese politics are really kind of absent from this movie. And so what is in the place of that is the way that these peasants view these priests and the way that these priests view their own mission, which is super interesting to me. You guys talked about how the first hour of this felt very confined, and I find that shocking because compared to the rest of the movie, there's so much like joy and so much fulfillment in the first part of this movie.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a negative.
That's not, no, no. Well, but I didn't say the first half was claustrophobic. So I just want to make that clear. Right.
Yeah, okay. It's me who's the problem.
Okay. Well, yeah, we both said it, but Mike actually set a time when that happened. But yeah, the first part of this movie is these two men who we don't really see a lot of their life back in Portugal, but it seems as though they're rather academic. This mm-hmm. appears to be their first real mission. And you can sense the way that Andrew Garfield's character, at least, gathers faith from ministering to the faithful.
Yep.
And later on, you can kind of get the feeling that he himself is willing to die for his religion because, you know, he's Catholic. That's like the fast track to sainthood. Like, you can't get much better than being martyred as a missionary. In 100 years, you're going to be made a saint. A pope's going to say your name, and, you know, people are going to get confirmed under your name, and they're going to wear medals with you on them. That's great. Mm-hmm. Where the question comes is whether he should let others suffer for his faith. And that's where it starts to get really interesting. Where this movie starts to say, like, and, you know, the characters themselves. Like, at what point are these external worldly shows of faith more important than what's in your heart? And is betraying what's in your heart the same as betraying what you're actually feeling towards? And that is the type of interrogation of the logic and the expected illogic of belief that you don't really get in other films. I mean, people who don't know me find out I'm a film critic, and then they find out I'm Catholic, and they're like, oh, you must love God's Not Dead. And I just murder them on the spot, physically, and literally.
And then you go to confession.
And then I go to confession. That's right, yeah. Forgive me, Father, for I've sinned. It has been 13 days since my last confession.
And since I murdered someone.
He's just like, Brian, I keep telling you, you don't have to do that. But no, I mean, because those movies are not... They're not faith-based. They're not movies about religion. They're not movies that give you a reason to believe or ask you to consider belief. They're movies that are made to like self-congratulate people who claim that they believe. And that's just boring as hell. I don't know why anyone would want to watch a movie like that. To me, one of the best faith-based movies that was made before Silence was Noah. Because mm-hmm. Noah...
And roundly criticized and just like denounced by a lot of Christians.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, no, there can't be rock monsters in my religious film. And I'm like, dude, like that's the most interesting thing.
Have you read the Bible?
Yeah. That's the most interesting thing about this entire film. And like, Jesus, people.
Well, their other problem was like, oh, it shows like Noah getting drunk and like it's violent and there's all this other stuff. And I'm like, guys, like what? That's the Bible. That's where the interest comes from. Like, I go to church to be told that God loves me because I believe in him. I go to church to be in a community of people who believe what I believe. I go to the movies to be challenged. I go to the movies to think harder. I haven't read a single religiously focused book like ever, because to me, having someone agree with you is the most boring way to spend your time. And because Scorsese is like famously a self-described lapsed Catholic, I knew what to expect here, and I was excited for it. And it's, this movie delivers. If you're the type of person who is willing to have your belief challenged or wants to understand the internal debate and struggle that goes along with having that belief, this is a great movie. Noah had a movie where God was taken as given, like where they literally talk about Adam and Eve because they're like only a couple generations removed from them.
Yep.
But that, even that movie that said, yeah, God is real. Yeah, he told this guy to build this ark. Like, that was still able to find super interesting ideas in the crevices between those words. The concept of, okay, you're supposed to build an ark to save the animals. Like, well, does that mean that God wants all humans to die?
And it makes it very clear that he hears a lot of humans dying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. And then even better, it's like, okay, well, now you have all the animals on the ark, and you're on the ark, and you're like, well, we're all going to die. But then you find out that your I guess, adopted daughter is pregnant. Like, is that a sign from God telling you that humanity is supposed to go on? Or is this another test from God? Like, those are interesting, weighty questions that Noah comes up with. Fucking Noah! With the rock monsters!
Like, I loved it. Man, that was, it was such an entertaining, interesting film that just went nowhere for so many people for so many of the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Just people are idiots.
And I swear to God, the same Christian audiences who had a problem with Noah are probably going to have a problem with Silence, because Silence doesn't give an answer. I mean, the silence of the title is the silence that comes back to you when you pray to God. Like, that's pretty dark. What? Like, people constantly consider, like, they say, like, I heard the voice of God. You know, God told me
God's
to do this.
God's calling.
Right. Yeah. Which is a thing. Like, you can say, like, I felt God's calling towards the priesthood, or I felt God's calling towards, like, becoming a doctor so I could help people. And then the cynic's response is, oh yeah, what did his voice sound like? Like, that's not it. I'm not on the phone.
This is not a conversation.
And Silence, the movie, is a movie that understands that and grapples with it. And it's not like these fucking Pureflix films that reward their righteous characters because it's written. Like, they've written this movie to tell people that. This is a movie that fully accepts reality and fully accepts that part of reality for a lot of people is faith, and then fully accepts that the reality of the faithful is going to be, by and large, silence.
Wait, I want to pause for 1 second here, and I wanted to ask, another writer posited this to me. This was actually before we even watched the movie, but why do you guys think that this has not been a film? I mean, I know you just explained afterwards why, you know, some Christians or religious people would find this difficult, but why do you think this film in general wasn't being more aggressively marketed to religious congregations?
I think part of it is because this film was being held very close to the vest. This film barely came out this year. Right.
That's true.
This film was being edited from my understanding to the last moment, pretty much.
Yeah.
I remember hearing that. Wasn't this one that, you know, Jesus, Scorsese has a lot of films like this, but
sure.
wasn't like the first edit of this film, like 5 hours long or something like that. Like,
aren't they all?
Yeah.
He's been trying to make this for 25 years.
Yeah. Yes. So I think part of it is this film barely came out when it barely qualified for the Oscars, and I know probably neither of y'all really like me to bring that up, but it's a fact. And this film also is, like Brian was saying, by a man that has lapsed as a Catholic. So,
it debuted at the Vatican. Yeah.
So that's what's
let's be very, very honest here. The new Pope right now is a badass. This guy's almost as badass as
the young Pope.
we're not going down this. Nope.
Sorry. Yeah. What I wanted to say, Bill,
he's a very interesting and progressive, like, religious leader, and sure.
Love that.
So the fact that, yeah, maybe Catholicism didn't kind of, you know, and their billion followers didn't kind of come behind this film. I'm not quite sure what was going on.
Scorsese has burned his bridges in the past. I mean, people, yeah, like, didn't they? I don't want to say this if it's
also
not
his
right,
last
but I'm pretty sure
fucking movie was Wolf of Wall Street.
But
yes.
Here's the thing. Like, I'm pretty sure that, like, bomb threats at the very least were made against theaters showing Last Temptation of Christ. I mean,
yeah.
Scorsese has had his moments with the church. But I think, Bill, you hit on it when you said, like, how Noah was roundly rejected, because people hear, oh, this religiously focused film made like $300 million and we don't know how or why. Because evangelical Christians in this country are a very large group, and they can get a movie like God's Not Dead to $100 million. But they almost to a T want a movie that affirms their faith, that makes them feel a little less persecuted than they feel they are. And a movie like Noah, a movie like Silence, is not going to give that to them. And I think that Silence didn't really set out to court them. Like you said, because it barely came out in 2016. And I think because people are going to know, like, this is not a movie that says, you believe in God, hooray. This is a movie that says, you believe in God, you're willing to die for that belief. You're willing to die not even just so that you don't have to step on an icon of Christ or Mary. That's a little, like, isn't that crazy? Like, isn't that a little nuts?
Yeah.
Like, is that, if you love God in your heart, don't you think you'd be okay with you saving your life and the life of your family by doing that? Like, maybe? And it doesn't have an answer. It doesn't really have a firm answer in either direction. And I think that
there are nuances
want that answer. Go ahead, Mike.
Brian, but there are stances being I agree that obviously, like, that like, you know, impending question of, you know, whether faith amounts to anything at all, it is obviously, like, left ambiguous, but there are stances that are being taken in this movie as well. Like, it's not like it is totally left up to the viewer. There are very specific bias. I guess I'm getting into later stuff, but, like,
yeah,
I just have to take issue a little bit with quite that type of sweeping statement. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I actually agree with Michael, and we can kind of get into that in a little bit. But I do want to mention two things real quick. I think before 300 came out,
I am very interested to know where this is going.
The Passion of the Christ was the number one rated R box office gross. Okay, mm-hmm. So I think a lot of religious people showed up in force for that film.
I was there opening night, actually.
I think that film burned a lot of people, right? I don't think there were quite as many repeat viewers, especially from the Christian demographic, because I feel like that kind of burned a lot of people. This film is also, from my understanding, rated R. Not really for any reason that I can really tell.
I would say violence, prolonged
torture.
it's just, I don't know. It's people die in movies all the time.
Yeah, like, Bill, you have a point. Like this, I've seen PG-13 movies with a higher body count and more horrifying stuff, but I think that there is level.
This is an adult film. Yeah. This is an adult film, and that's the same reason why The Matrix got a rated R, because it's an adult film and it's not for kids. And somehow The Dark Knight doesn't get a rated R because that's clearly
money
for adults. Yeah. Anyways, that movie made $1 billion. It wouldn't have sniffed that if it was rated R. Anyways, the other thing I want to mention is, I think a lot of the religious films, now look, I haven't seen them, but from my understanding, a lot of the religious films that come out are mass marketed to all churches, all of the Christian faiths, all of the branches, right? They're Baptist, they're Catholic, they're Episcopalian, they're Jesuit, they're all of this. This film is very much Catholic. Very, very much Catholic. And I think that limits its broader appeal to the Christian faith as a whole. So that's just my interpretation. I haven't seen a lot of these religious films, but from everything that I gather about them, they are kind of non-denominational. They are about God and Christianity.
I would say that actually most Catholics I know cannot stand, I'll just call them the pure flicks films. You know, those, they don't speak to us. And one of, I think this came up last when we were talking about The Witch, but my daughter's christening actually brought this to the fore. My wife is not Christian. She, however, comes from a family that is deeply Protestant, Southern Protestant style Christian. You would think that that would be fine. It is not fine. Apparently, Protestants, some forms of Protestantism, especially in the South, I guess, are taught that Catholics are basically about on par with the people who worshipped the golden calf.
I would take issue with that as a Southern Baptist myself. We're just taught that our religion is right. which is basically telling you that, yeah, they believe in Christ, but they don't follow the way that they should.
Right.
And you're just like, wait, so does that equate them with like Buddhism, or am I supposed to be friendly with them because we both believe in the same fucking God? Like, is that okay? And it's just like, yeah, there's a very antagonistic view that a lot of Southern Baptists have as far as other religions. That is pretty troubling.
I know that my wife's Protestant family has a couple of issues. One, the Pope. They seem to think that we worship the Pope. She actually got in an argument with her mother over text a couple of days ago, related to something about the christening, because we, of course, invited her family to the christening, because like God only knows what would happen if something that important to our daughter's like life was something that we didn't invite her family to. She said something along the lines of like, we view our clergy as demigods, which is not true.
They
apparently thought that Catholics viewed their clergy as demigods.
There's a conversation to be had there, though. Not demigods, but there's a conversation about reverence.
Sure, and about the Pope and kind of, a little bit. But look, I'm not a fucking Catholic, Brian, like, here.
I'll just say it now. God is still the chief guy. Like, if a pope suddenly said, you know, that's like that sixth commandment, don't kill anyone, we can just toss that out. I mean, people would be like, no, no, no. I'm pretty sure that's one of the foundations. We can't do that. But yeah, it's just, it's this weird thing where, like, Catholics, we're the original. We're the original Christians. And for some reason, we're very separate from the rest of them. Her family, like, was honestly angry when they found out that our daughter would be baptized Catholic, to which my wife said, you're lucky that I married Brian, who's a Catholic, because if it weren't for him, the daughter wouldn't be baptized at all. And that shut them up fairly quickly, because it's true.
So did your wife have complicated... did your wife see this then?
No, actually. She was home with our daughter, and she wants to see it, but I got a press screening to go see it, and I was like, baby, I love you. but I'm definitely going to this press screening and leaving you at home with our daughter. And she was fine with
I gotta see the latest woman. I gotta see the latest Scorsese joint. Gotta go.
Yeah, it's the newest Scorsese. It's like a decade in the making, and it's all about Catholics. And she's like, you know what? Oh, no. This is important to you.
Nearly two and a half days.
This one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll just say, like, this is a very Catholic oriented movie. A lot of it has to do with Catholic dogma and yes, the importance that we put on the symbols of our faith. And yeah, I can see how, like, the Pure Flix crowd would be pretty uninterested in this. Does that answer your question, Mike? I just feel like, yeah, this movie's operating at a level that the previous movies that have been courted to the Christian groups is not going to work.
No, certainly. I just thought it was worthy of a conversation, and I think you guys had a pretty interesting conversation about it. So,
this movie made my top 10. I won't say where, because that's our next episode. But spoilers for my top 10, this will be on it. Just behind Triple Nine. And
Jesus fucking Christ. Quite literally.
Yes. Yeah, that's so I'm just going to say it's a great movie. It's fantastic. I don't know that I could I recommend this wholeheartedly. Well, but, like, you got to know what you're in for. Like, this isn't like
Okay, so how do you describe this to people? Cuz I've been asked by multiple people to whether I like silence, and it's tough to say.
If you want a movie that is at once interesting from a historical perspective, because we don't see a lot of movies where the Christians are the downtrodden, like not like the Pure Flix movies where, like, everyone's a hateful atheist and you've got to evangelize to them. Oh, that's another problem. They're upset that Catholics don't evangelize as much as they should. You don't see a lot of movies that take the historical perspective of those poor Catholics had it rough. So that's an interesting and novel thing to see. Missionaries don't usually get tossed around a lot in a movie like in Hollywood. I would say that the times that I've described this movie to people, I pretty much described it thusly. It's a deep, earnest interrogation of faith. And if that is not something that you are interested in, like, consuming, you will probably dislike it, because the story on a personal level for these characters is weaker than I was expecting. And so I don't think people would be able to get anything from it from a character perspective if they're not coming to it with an interest in faith.
Yeah, I mean, speaking from a general perspective, I do have to admit that I think there is, as you said, Brian, like, it is not necessarily trying to give, you know, fair shrift to both sides, but it is slightly frustrating to me, and we'll get further into it, that we are getting a view of the Japanese that is so condensed to a single subject and to views that are not only, but are primarily based in antagonism than understanding their particular cultural perspective. Like, I think the movie finds obviously interesting conversations and dialogues in terms of how, especially how the Jesuits, like so many of their beliefs just don't apply in Japan. Like, I find that very interesting. And some of that stuff, but
the movie makes a solid argument for like why these people don't want the Jesuits there.
Yeah.
It's like, we didn't ask for you to be here. You just keep coming. Like, what is wrong with you? All these people were happy-ish, I guess, you know, before you showed up. Like, if it weren't for you, they wouldn't be suffering like this. You know that this is gonna what will happen. Like, why do you keep setting them up for martyrdom? And it's a lot of hard questions that there's not really an answer to. All the missionaries have to say is, well, we're spreading the word of God because that's what he wants. It's like, really? Look at this. Is this what he wants? Wants you to have to make me hurt these people?
let's jump into spoilers, shall we?
Yeah, I wanted to. That's what I was saying with my whole. It's great. I love it. I definitely think people should see it. That was my wrap up. Bill, would you recommend this to people?
No.
Okay. not even. Wait a second. Because you didn't like La La Land, but you said, "Oh, it's in the conversation for Oscars. You should see it." You think that? Not
yeah.
Even that...
I don't think this is part of our cultural conversation. I don't think seeing silence is a necessary part of our cultural conversation.
All right.
So
interesting. Okay.
Even though it's made by Scorsese, really?
Yeah, I mean, look, like I mentioned at the top of my review, Scorsese makes films that are sometimes populist, sometimes they are Wolf of Wall Street, sometimes they are, I'm not sure, this.
I mean, about he goes from like Goodfellas, Casino, Departed to Bringing Out the Dead.
Was Condun right around then too?
Yeah,
or Condun? I don't know how to pronounce it.
I think it's Condun. But I don't know. All right. And Michael Snydell,
let me briefly mention that the I know I already mentioned kind of gave a shout out to the Japanese actors, but just as kind of it's nice that I didn't recognize a lot of them, but they are fantastic. They are. One of the early things that I had heard about this film was that it was a shame that a lot of the Japanese actors more than likely would not get supporting or best actor nominations, because that's just not something that happens a lot. And I have to agree, it is definitely disappointing that a lot of these guys will probably not even be in the consideration for some of these awards that they deliver. They are, to me, the heart and soul of this film.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, during that first part, like, they're what give this movie its heart and soul, and especially in the latter half. For instance, I apologize in advance. Yosuke Kubozuka.
Yeah.
Who plays Kichijiro.
He could be our new Toshiro Mifune. He's amazing.
He's amazing. He's great. He's especially, and it's a purposefully thankless character, and he plays it so well. He's
great, and I really really enjoyed Issei Ogata, who plays the
Inuyori.
I guess
Inquisitor.
Yes, he's the Inquisitor. Yeah. He is I love his voice. I love like everything. Like he reminds me so much. If this was a big American film, he reminds me. Why can't I think of his name right now? From the Nazi
Christoph
Tarantino. Yeah, he reminds me so much of how Christoph Waltz had this kind of unique presentation of dialogue and things like that, and people just fell instantly head over heels for him, and that made that film, beyond everything that it was, it was, people were like, oh, you got to see this guy. Like, this guy's so crazy. He's so cool. That is exactly what Yusuke is.
You just sink into his delivery every time he starts talking.
He like, just the way that he sits and moves is like hypnotic.
Oh, I love it. There is one moment in this film where he's talking and he takes a pause and he shrinks within himself. Mm-mm. I was just mesmerized by. I was just like, choice. what is going on here? This guy is just selling it.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. He's great.
It's crazy, Bill, because you said you wouldn't recommend this, but there seems to be a lot of things that you're like, you're kind of on board for.
Performances? Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, watch a highlight reel of Issei Ogata.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So let's get into spoilers. I have to ask. So what happens in this movie, Andrew Garfield, Father Rodriguez, he gets captured. And he is not tortured. He is actually allowed to minister to the other captive Christians. But then those people start to get tortured. And throughout this movie, there's a kind of trial that these Christians have to go through. And I think that it is called Fumie. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's Fumie. And it is a carven likeness of Christ or the Virgin Mary. And the authorities put these down and then they say, all right, prove you're not a Christian, step on this. And that's all they want is for these people to trod on the likeness of their idols. And people won't do it, because that's disrespectful to your God. So throughout this whole movie, people aren't doing this and they're suffering for it. And at a certain point, it becomes clear that the only way that these people are going to be able to be saved is by Andrew Garfield apostatizing, renouncing God, giving up his religion, and just being done with it. And that's the only way he can save these people. Because even at the end, when they have apostatized and renounced Christianity, they're still being tortured because he has remained stalwart. Which is awful. It's a terrible thing that they're doing to this guy. And so I'm curious, at the end, when it's revealed that Father Ferreira had apostatized and renounced God, and he is living as a Japanese person, and is actually writing tomes about the falseness of Christianity and the rightness of a Japanese way of life. Did you have any, I guess, did you have a dog in the fight over whether Father Rodriguez, as played by Andrew Garfield, would trample on this Fumie?
So can I think maybe I'll be speaking for Michael as well here, but I won't presume. We'll wait until I finish. But
I'm fine with cutting Michael off and just letting you speak for me.
here's my main.
You guys, should I just like get off this podcast? Yeah, you guys want to talk about
me? Get out
the
of
role
here.
Of Michael will be played by Bill Graham.
you can hashtag us and tell you Bill I agree or Bill I don't agree. That's all we need. No. So here's my biggest issue with this film. Okay. Brian, all of the exploration and things like that, I find it's really interesting, because I wish the film had more of what you're actually talking about. I think in nooks and crannies, it does. It does kind of explore some of these things. But I think the major, major fulcrum of this film is whether someone will denounce their religion in front of other people. And I think the crux of this is the idea that the Japanese have, at least in this film, that if you denounce your religion, then it means you denounce your religion. It stands for something. And in my viewpoint, I just can't get my head around the idea that, all you want me to do to save these people is step on a stone. I understand it's got the face of Jesus on it. I understand that it's got the face of God on it. I understand that this may not be something particularly like, you know, it is kind of taking the Lord's name in vain in a way. But my ultimate thing is I am here to spread Christianity. That is my goal. That is my job. And in that name, if I have to step on some fucking stones to do that, I'm going to do that all day long. If I get to save my Jew or my Jesuit followers behind me because I step on a stone, I'm going to take that option every single time. And I think the hardest thing for me to grapple with is this idea that your religion is so entwined in your fiber, in every fiber of your being, that would be a problem, right? Because you even mentioned it at a couple of times, like, denounce your faith, save these people. Denounce your faith, save these people. And internally, if I denounce my faith externally, does that mean I'm doing it internally? To me, there's a clear and present difference. Like, there's definitely a difference. And I don't see how this film really explores that in any satisfying way for me personally, because I just can't wrap my head around the idea that, okay, you want me to denounce my faith? Fine. I'm kind of with Kichiro here, where I'm just going to kind of keep doing it to survive. And, you know, I'm going to probably have some demons with me. My God, this guy, you know, he's pretty messed up by the end of this film. But, like, I just can't get my head around the idea that is the entire crux of this, of the main point of this film. You know, this is painting it with a broad brush, I agree, but that's just my viewpoint. Is I just can't wrap my head around this struggle where it's just like, okay, but if you denounce it openly, that doesn't mean that's what's in your heart. So I'm fine with it. I'm okay with that, you know? So that's my feeling.
All right, Michael Snydell, did you have any kind of – did Bill speak for you?
He did not. I did like that, and I think I mean, if I'm being honest, I think I probably had to bring some theological – or excuse me, remove some of the theological aspects in that. But I did feel immersed in – you know, understanding of that experience, you know, in the same way that like something like, for some reason, what's coming to mind right now is Albert Camus' The Stranger. And that's in the sense of, you know, if you are faced with a situation that requires you to denounce your entire being, forget religion, forget, you know, dogma or, you know, any specific things about, you know, idols or anything like that. I think what was happening there that I did find satisfying was how if Garfield's character went through Rodriguez, is that right, guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
If Rodriguez went through with this, he was admitting that he'd essentially wasted his whole life, and that I like the way that this film finds, you know, I guess it's a big thing in general as I think about it in Scorsese, but it skirts the line between the sacred and the profane, in the sense that the sacred that he believes he has a deep duty and to his spirituality, but also the profane in the sense of that the movie also isn't afraid to admit that there's ego at play here too. Mm-hmm. Like it's not simply a spiritual act. It is something that
it's like
requires
I said
him to
earlier,
admit.
Like if he dies, he's a Catholic rock star.
Sure. And yeah, so I mean, there's the martyr thing.
Yeah.
But there's, it's also like a fundamental weakness in his sense of self if he does this. And yeah, like I just think that I don't have a problem with that. We're in spoilers now, aren't
we? Yes, we are.
Okay. I have a problem with the fact that Scorsese frames it in a way that constantly leans him as a hero, even as we're saying that, yes, we're watching him like see this horrible torture happen to his fellow Christians. But the movie is still presented in a way that bothers me because it's in the conversations. So it's in the conversations that there's just this superiority that implicitly comes through. So I guess what I'm specifically talking about is, you know, there's a big line at the end that I would definitely like to hear your guys' opinion about. And it's a line where Issy Ogata's character, the regional leader.
Yeah.
Right.
The line he says about how Japan is a swamp. And my biggest problem with this movie is that as it keeps going, and especially in the last 10 to 15 minutes, it leans further and further away from the ambiguity around the question what we're supposed to think about either Rodriguez or what we're supposed to think about Jesuits or what we're supposed to think about the role of religion. And I like that that's ambiguous for so long and that it's, you know, literally held over our head as we're watching people being tortured. But also in the conversations, the way that the Japanese people, specifically the people who believe in Buddhism, the way that they're presented, it's with this singular resilience. It's not in terms of full characters. It is in relation to how they view Fume. Is that how you said that, Brian?
I honestly don't know how to say
it. All right. I'm going on now, but that is my bigger problem. I didn't have a problem of buying into why Garfield struggles with this. I had a problem with Scorsese's encroaching Catholicism making its way into the film. And that's weird because I'm not quite sure whether to define that as a failure or my own biases. Because by the end, I did want less of a priority with Rodriguez's perspective. And maybe I'm potentially simplifying it just a bit here, but especially with that last shot, there's just this tinge of smugness that is coming through that overwhelms that he also stuck to his beliefs. Like it's a weird contradiction,
but
of the film's dialogue.
I don't think that he did stick to his beliefs. I mean,
but that last shot tells us he did.
It means that he kept his faith, but here's the thing, and I, you know, for me, when it shows his face and then cuts to his foot on that Fumi or whatever it is,
sure,
that was painful for me. Like, I deflated when I saw that because
you're a stubborn motherfucker.
Yeah, obviously, I'm like, you know, and plus they're not torturing me. I'll let 100 people die before I do anything that makes me seem worse. Here's the thing, it's so hard to know how best to show your belief. I mean, you know, I can say I'm Catholic, that's great, and then I could go out and murder someone and, like, you know, cheat on my taxes, I guess? I don't know, like, steal and rob and like, just not be a faithful friend and, like, just completely destroy. Like, it's those external actions that I don't do and the good things that I do that make me a Catholic. It's not that I say that I'm Catholic. It's not that when I'm alone, I pull out a cross and say, hey, I'm still on your side, even though I'm out there every day helping to hook preschoolers on heroin. Like, you know, but you know that we're real, right? You know that I'm your boy, even though I'm not acting like it. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you only have those challenges of faith by which to prove your faith. So for me, it's really darkly ingenious to deny this man his own suffering for his faith and making him hear other people suffer for his faith. Because it's true. You consider yourself the shepherd of this flock. How are you going to be able to let them suffer? Like, that's not the way it's supposed to work. And, but if you trample as he does, even if it's this weird thing, and I spent like a good hour trying to write a single sentence in my review of this that I posted on my personal site. You have faith in God, and there's a faithless act, which is in this case trampling, and someone says, do this thing, and you could say, yeah, I can do that because I do have faith in God. But if you did have faith in God, you wouldn't do it. It becomes a catch-22. It becomes a Mobius strip of ill logic, because if you had faith, you wouldn't do it. But if you're trying to save other people or yourself, you would do it because that's what your faith would dictate. But, like, it's just an impossible question. And so through that impossibility, that's where the juice in this narrative comes from. It's this question of, let's say that he believes in God, which he obviously does, but he trampled on the image of God. So either he doesn't believe, in which case he trampled on it, or he does believe and he trampled on it, in which case he's profaned his God, in which case God will have turned his back on him because he wasn't a faithful servant. Like, there's just, it's a web, and there's not a single thing that you can do to get out of it. So the only thing that he really could have done as a faithful servant of God would be to ask himself, what does trampling on this thing mean? It means that I don't believe in God. Do I believe in God? If the answer is yes, you can't trample. If the answer is yes and you do trample, then that means you're lying against your own heart and you're betraying God, which is not great. But you also can't let these people suffer. And so yep. I didn't know what he could do. I sort of kept expecting him to kill himself.
Uh-huh.
But that's also a sin. You can't do that. So it becomes this impossible question. And so at the end, when, again, you know, he's lived this life pretending to be a good Japanese citizen with a wife and a child gifted to him by the Inquisitor. And he's helped to ferret out Christian artifacts and all this stuff. I mean, he may still believe in God. He may be cremated, which is, again, not a Christian burial rite. Well, a Catholic burial rite. He may be cremated with his cross. So he kept his personal faith, but he wasn't acting it. And if you're not acting it, then what are you doing? But the thing is, we don't know if he was ministering to Kinchijiro in private. We don't know if he perhaps converted his wife. And so
Kichiro Kichiro comes to him and is asking to have confession, and he's saying, and I think that's one of the key moments for me that actually makes me question whether he did kind of lose his face. But for me, to be honest, I didn't ever feel like he did lose his faith. I never thought that was ever in question, no matter if he was stepping on the face of God or not. I never got the idea that someone was, by doing that simple act, was challenging his faith to the point where he would have to give it up. I think he was not practicing for a while, and I think rightly he was like, no, I can't have your confession, not because I don't want to, but because literally I am not a practicing follower of you know, the faith right now. I can't hear your confession. This will be null and void. Like, this is a waste of breath. But I think it would have been like, just give me something more narratively beyond just him just living kind of this blank subsistence. Like, give me something where he's actually challenged, where he's actually, maybe he converts to Buddhism for a little while. Maybe he has to do something that's just, I don't know. I wanted to see, and this is one of those things where it's like, well, show me, right? And isn't that like, you know, the atheist kind of calling against a lot of religious kind of things is like, well, prove it. And it's like, well, that's awfully hard to do. And it's like, exactly.
It's not only awfully hard to do, if you need proof, then it's not faith and it's not real.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like if I said to like a girlfriend, like, I don't believe that you're going to not cheat on me. Give me all of your passwords and let me put a microphone on you. Like, that's not a healthy relationship. Like, it's not a healthy relationship if you are not willing to take some of it on faith.
I don't know. I just wish that I was conflicted in his faith like you kind of are. Because to me, like I mentioned, there was never a moment where his faith was at risk at any point in this film. No matter if he was practicing outwardly or not, I personally believe that you don't have to necessarily outwardly appear to practice faith to be religious. I think you can read your Bible. I think you can be a good Christian. I think you can do a lot of these things without having to act it out. Particularly when acting it out potentially kills or maims the people around you or yourself, right? So,
but Bill, I kind of feel like, to be fair, your problems are directly connected to not being able to buy why the fume was such a difficult question. If you don't buy into that, then the further explorations, they're not going to connect with you.
Right.
Yeah, and that's kind of my issue. That's kind of my bag, and that's why for 2.5 hours I was very frustrated with this movie, because I was like, guys, like, this is a practicing priest. Like, I don't care what you're asking him to do. Like, there's a very clear and obvious choice for me, and that's stepping on the stone and being able to move on and continue to convert other people in secret, basically, you know. I don't know. Like, I think secret religion is better than dead religion. That's just me. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's, I guess, like, the easiest way to respond to that is that's not how it works.
Yeah. Well, that's not how your religion teaches you how it works. Right.
Well, and I happen to be the religion of these people in this movie, so...
This
is what this film is almost entirely about
because
in a sense. But I have to agree with Bill a little bit, though, that, like...
Oh no, it makes sense logically. Like if I had to make a religion, like whole cloth, I would make a religion that actively said, if someone's threatening to kill you, I'm totally cool with you claiming to not be this religion. But
it's beyond philosophical discussion at a certain point as well. It is cinematically the way that Scorsese decided to do this is that it is mostly an internal thing that that hinges on one or two things. And one thing we haven't even mentioned is that the last 15 minutes of this movie changes fucking narrators.
Yeah.
Like let's just say that. Scorsese does a lot of things to push you out if you're on the edge.
Well, because what we have for the longest time is Father Rodriguez's prayer as a narration. I mean, he's constantly praying, and that makes up the narration. What happens then is that he stops praying.
I guess because the way I kind of took it, because he's also being watched, and
But that's the thing. Like I guess you gotta kind of have to be us to get us.
Yep.
It's not,
and I'm not you.
it's not enough. Like I said, to go outside and pretend to be, like, if you're not willing to suffer for your faith, then it's not really faith. It's not a thing. Again, to take it back to a girlfriend analogy, there's that whole thing of like, if you're dating a guy, but he never takes you around to see his friends and won't go out in public with you, you're not actually his girlfriend. Like, there's something about you that is shameful to him, and he's gonna keep you.
Welcome to 2017, guys. And more Brian's metaphors.
At least I don't think I've done a food one yet.
Nope, not yet.
No, you haven't.
There are some food stuff in here that are cringeworthy.
I mean, there's a bug
that continues to pester Issey Ogata throughout this entire film.
Yeah, that fly.
Love it.
So, like, yeah, I just like I get it. I honestly do, and that's like what I loved about this film is that super logical question of like, look, I'm gonna keep hurting these people unless you do this thing. What is it going to cost you? And the answer is, it's going to cost you, at the very least, your own faith in yourself as a Catholic. And at the most, it's going to cost you your immortal soul. But there's no way to know. And when he prays for an answer, the answer is silence. Until that one time where he looks down and he hears the voice of God and it says, you know, trample on me. Just do it. I came here to be trampled on. Which is true. That's why Christ came to earth, was to die for our sins, to suffer and die, to take the punishment onto himself so that we could go to heaven, if you believe that. So that's another layer. That's another layer of this guy being like, how many different fucking answers can I take from my simple knowledge and apply to this? And the only thing that could really give him an answer is if God literally sent an angel down and the angel said, lo, I bring unto you good tidings, you don't have to do this shit anymore, just step on that thing. but he doesn't, because it's silence. There is your God is a silent God, and that's all you're gonna get. And all you can do is try to live your life in a way that you think gives any kind of glory to him. And that's why the final line of dialogue in this movie in voiceover is like, whether he was lost to God, only God can know. Because we have all these rules and we have all these relics and we have all these rituals. But in the end, we're only doing what we think is right, what we think is wanted of us. And the only
doesn't that challenge like religious faith altogether?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's basically saying, yeah, you can say all these things, you can do all these things, you can practice your religion as much as you want, but ultimately it's up to God.
Well, yeah.
That's kind of scary.
Oh, it's terrifying. I mean, welcome. Why do you think Catholic guilt is such a thing? Like, as an Irish Italian Catholic, like,
my life is a
hellstorm, like, of uncertainty all the time. Yeah, it's rough, man. I wouldn't recommend it.
Come to my religion.
I am at once a poor evangelist and a decent evangelist, because in my life I'm a pretty nice guy, and I do a lot of nice things for people. And like, I think I had one friend, with humility.
Well, like,
I just do. I'm not saying I'm the best person on earth, because, like, let's be honest, guys, I'm a huge asshole. But like, at a certain point, like, just being a decent person is enough sometimes. Like, I have made people who have said that they hate all religions realize that sometimes they're not so bad, just because at some point I'll say, well, I'm a Catholic, and the only reason I picked you up at the airport was because I'm a Catholic. Like, otherwise I would have told you to go fuck yourself. But I'm a nice guy. And so they're like, oh, well, how about that? Like, that's part of it. It's just living your life in a way that people will, you know, view you as something of a good advertisement. Like a guy who suddenly starts a diet and drops 5 pounds. Like, he doesn't have to tell everyone about his diet, but people will just say, like, that's the guy who decided to only eat apples, and he's looking pretty slim. Maybe I should only eat apples. Is this a food metaphor? I think this counts.
Are they the red ones? Are they the Golden Delicious? Or
jazz apples, Bill.
The green ones? Oh, jazz apples. Is that a reference to Sebastian from fucking La La Land? I don't know what a jazz apple.
No, it's an actual.
I don't know what a
apple.
Jazz apple is.
Oh my god,
Fuji
Bill.
For life.
Bill, okay.
What'd you say? Fuji for life.
Fuji or Red Delicious?
Yes.
Fuji. Wait, Red Delicious Fuji, are terrible.
What about?
Dude,
you mean
off.
Golden Delicious? You mean Delicious?
Red Delicious are the ones that are like mealy and waxy.
You said bad Red Delicious. Get out of here.
Guys, I don't really think there's a bad apple.
I would say that Red Delicious is a bad apple.
I would disagree. Yeah.
Granny Smith, I used to love, but no, okay. I will evangelize about jazz apples. Jazz apples are tart and crisp and sweet, and they're so juicy. Oh.
How did we get on fucking apples?
You asked what kind of apple I was talking about. This is totally your fault, Bill. Welcome to 2011.
Yeah, Bill, it's your fault.
Much like 2016.
I will step on that stone. I will step on that apple. Fine.
Don't step. Just let me eat the apple. I got a jazz apple downstairs. I'm just going to eat that apple.
It's okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know, the movie ends in a way where it says, like, literally only God can know, which is true. And I think that's one of the greatest things about this movie is that it doesn't say, like, it doesn't have someone come up to him and say, like, you were a coward. I would have loved to have died to prop up your faith. Like, he never really talks to any of those people again. And I like that the movie leaves that uncertain. I like that the movie really does function as a firm debate within itself that then kind of leaves you there to exist in the void created by that debate.
Yes.
Let me ask y'all this. Okay.
This will be the last question, and then we'll wrap up. So Bill,
sure.
Have at it.
Sure.
Make it a good one.
Okay. No pressure. Guys, the reported budget on this film was $50 million. Does that seem right?
That seems low.
That seems low?
Yeah.
When you get into scouting and things like that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say location shooting. Hmm. I imagine there was a lot of visual effects going on that were like the background stuff that you don't really notice. Yeah. I posted the VFX reel for The Shallows. Did you guys see that?
I haven't yet.
I didn't watch it yet, no.
Dude, you got to see it.
Well, I love The Shallows. I'm talking about the VFX reel.
No, that's what I'm talking about. Like, it seems as though she was never on a beach.
What?
Wow.
Like, you got to look at it. She's like, it'll show her, like, on the rock, and it's, like, all blue screen around her.
Well, that kind of makes sense. But, damn, they did a really good job of selling the fact that she was She was on a like fucking rock in the middle. Yeah, in the middle of some studio somewhere.
Yeah, it's that kind of like quiet, silent VFX work that like it really like salvages everyone who's like, man, there's too much special effects in movies. It's like even a movie like The Shallows, where say whatever you want about the shark, but I bet you believe that she was on a rock 50 feet from shore. Anyway.
Yeah, I thought so.
So yeah, I would say that 50 million is actually pretty low for what I considered for this movie.
But okay, guys,
I thought that was high. I thought that was really high. So
nope.
That's me,
Mike.
Okay, what were you saying, Mike?
Do you guys have any thoughts about the narrator switch?
I didn't like it.
I thought it was fine.
Okay, but do you...
Please go on.
No, I guess I just mean that I think we got bogged down in a lot of philosophical questions and got away from the cinematic presentation here. Like, I think that there is a lot of, as we've, you know, kind of hashed out, there's a lot of philosophical discussions here. But, like, in the end, it is a little bit more clear-cut in the way that it's presented near the end of this movie. Like, the structure does start streamlining and starts, you know, prioritizing certain perspectives, as well as the fact that we literally get, you know, a Dutch trader talking about his experience and, you know, mythologizing Rodriguez's character. Like, as much as we're talking about the complexities of this, like, I think we've skirted a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've skirted a little bit that, like, at a certain point, this movie does make a lot more clear what it's trying to say about cultural viewpoints.
I don't know that I agree with you. I think that in giving us that Dutch trader, it's giving us a person who exists without any personal context with Rodriguez and his view of Rodriguez. And it shows us like what information is slipping out about him. And I think that it's a way to show kind of like the completeness of if any faith towards God remained in him, which I think it does. It was so completely obliterated from any outside view that by that point it truly was like only in God's eyes that he can really be redeemed. I think that the movie tries to alienate the viewpoint by that point. It takes you out of Rodriguez's mind. It takes you out of his personal circle. And it just gives you, like, if he had died a martyr, he would have been canonized and people would have known his story. But as it is, he lives this quiet life and only a scrap of his story is known by this Dutch trader. And what it is basically backs up the Japanese viewpoint that he had renounced God and taken up their lifestyle. That's how I saw
Bill, it. What did you make of it, Bill?
Of the end?
Yeah. Or what do you make of... Or did you feel that the ambiguity was... Well, I guess...
I didn't think there was any ambiguity. I didn't think there was any ambiguity. I thought it was very clear that he had remained faithful internally, you know, secretly, maybe. But otherwise, you know, he had lived this quiet existence just trying to make sure that he stayed alive, which I'll give Brian kind of credit here because it is kind of making me second guess. If you're living to just live and you were a priest, that's a hell of a step down as far as like your religion and things like that are concerned. I think had he been able to be banished, it would have been something else entirely, right? He would have been just like, okay, well, all right, bye. And then I'm going to go be a priest again. But he wasn't given that ability ever again. So I think that was kind of interesting, the way that kind of plays out. But I didn't the way I read it when I first saw the film was, oh, cool. Look, he's got the Jesus statue in his hand. Yep. Okay. So, yeah, I didn't see much ambiguity there, because again, my whole issue is, I don't think if you step on the Jesus stat or stone, that means you are now and forever never a Christian again. You know, I think the way that I kind of view religion and things like that is just, no, it's not an on off switch. It can be shades. You can be a good Christian, or you can be a mildly good Christian, or you can be a redeeming Christian, maybe trying to claw your way back into the goodness. But I don't think there's just kind of like a hard and fast line, unless it's a commandment, right? Unless you kill somebody or you do something like that, I think. But even then, religious teaches us that there is still the ability of redemption. You know, when Jesus saved murderers and thieves on the cross, like, that was literally last minute, like, redemption, right? So you can clearly live a pretty shitty life and at the last minute be saved. That's not how you should live, but that is kind of what the text teaches us. So,
So, Mike, does that answer your questions at all?
Yeah, it does. Yes.
Okay. I know that I could talk about this movie for forever. And we have been. It's we're at an hour and 40 minutes, just 1 hour shy of the runtime of the movie. This would be a terrible movie for us to beat the runtime of. So we're going to stop.
Don't you do it. Don't you do it.
So that's all. Any final statements before we sign off about this movie?
Japanese actors for life.
Yeah.
Give them all the awards.
I'm pretty sure that the film stage and one of our features, the breakout performances, I think, we said that it was like every single Japanese actor in this movie was amazing. I think that they all got a shout out in our end of year list.
Good. Indeed. Well deserved.
Yes. So, like I said, aesthetically beautiful and deeply intriguing from a theological point of view, if you were the type of theologically curious person who is interested in that. If not, I would honestly say probably stay away.
I don't think this is quite as impenetrable as you guys are saying. I guess the runtime is the biggest. Well,
yeah, I honestly think that it's the runtime. If this movie were an hour and a half long, which God, it couldn't be, but I would say, yeah, check it out. But like, there was a person behind me in my press screening in the press section whose first words upon the movie ending were, "That was way too long." Like, you know, first of all, fuck that guy.
He has my heart.
Yeah.
He has your number.
My immediate thought was Bill. And then my next thought was, you know, Bill, you say that movie, like, you want a 2 hour long movie, but you're willing to give a movie more time if it's good enough, which I think is a logical statement. But this guy wasn't like, I don't think that there was enough there to support the runtime. He just said, well, that was too long. Like, fuck that guy. And I honestly think that some people will feel that. I think that if
Noah was 138 movie or 38 minutes,
138 movies.
Yeah.
I think that if, and this might've been like what Bill kind of was saying, like, if you're the type of person who looks at this and says, why don't you just fucking step on that thing? Like, that might be, it might be difficult for you to sustain yourself over 160 minutes of people wanting to not step on that thing.
Yep.
Like, if that's what you're going to look at the movie as, that's going to be hard for you.
that's my whole fucking, like, point. Just step on that thing. That's my review.
Just step on that thing.
Step on it. All right. Well, that's all for today.
Jeez. Jesus.
Speaking of the Japanese, on Mubi right now, before we begin recording, our friend Michael Snydell pointed out that there is a musical by Takashi Miike that just came onto Mubi. It is called The Happiness of the Katakuris. And I have never seen this, but based purely on the picture that they have chosen to represent the film, it looks bananas in a good way. So maybe you all at home would love to check that out, or check out Terrence Davies' The Neon Bible, which is also on Mubi now. So check it out. Go to mubi.com/filmstage for a free 30-day trial. And don't forget that Mubi now has an app on Roku. So if you've got Roku, if you've got the stick or the box, or if you're like me and have a Roku TV, you now no longer have to mirror anything. You can just click straight through. Ooh, I just realized, also on Mubi now, The Fantastic Planet. Have you guys seen Fantastic Planet?
Nope.
Yeah. Oh,
it's on my list.
It's on Mubi right now. You should see it.
Woo!
I have the Blu-ray of this, actually, but it's a fantastic movie. That's all.
You know, I've watched Vampire's Kiss twice this year, but I haven't made
in
time
2017?
For Fantastic Planet. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. do you just run around screaming the alphabet at people?
No, I showed it to I saw it and then showed it to friends a couple days later.
It's
not
alphabetical.
Like...
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. Oh my God.
Anyway. Oh, keep going. Yeah, you gotta finish it.
G-U-P-W-X-Y-Z. Wow, I hurt myself towards the end there. Anyway, mubi.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial of Mubi. All right, guys, it's been a good time doing this. It's been like over a week since we've done one of these. I think, however, that we were able to jump back in with aplomb. And we will be talking in pretty much exactly 12 hours to go over our top 10s for the year.
Woo!
Woo! All right, so let's get out of here so we can have some much-needed private time to ourselves before we have to talk to each other again. Let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. Bill Graham.
I guess you can find me... I don't know. I don't have anything.
Bill will be periscoping, trotting on a fumei.
Yes, yes. I was about to say, you can find me with the hashtag step on that thing. But you can find me on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me writing about movies on The Film Stage and FreshFiction.tv.
I'm going to set up an opposing hashtag, don't step on that thing. See who gets more. Michael Snydell, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, having daily religious crises of faith. And in lieu of any pieces, I'm going to give a shout out to one of my best high school friends, Colleen, who is a big listener of the show. So.
All right. High school friend Colleen, shout out to you. You can find me on the Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. Again, that's hashtag don't step on that thing. And you can find all of us having written for the end of year lists over at thefilmstage.com. If you'd like to hear, or I guess read, more of my rambling about Silence, feel free to go to my personal site, dearfilm.net. But other than that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, and keep an eye on that podcast feed, because coming out right after this will be the three of us
Madness.
Running down our top 10 films of 2016, parentheses, which we have seen.
Will that be
close
as
parentheses.
Long as Silence, then?
What is that? Michael?
Michael? Will that podcast be as long as Silence?
I hope to God it will not be.
I will burn it down.
We've never seen what happens to Bill. I know, we all know what he feels about movies that go over 2 hours, but what would happen if we had him on a podcast that went over 2 hours? Let's find
out.
Don't
test my faith. Don't test my faith.
Hashtag don't step on that.
Well, thing. We only got 4 minutes. We could do it.
No, no, no. It's over. I'm fading the music up. See you.